Okay, another nice meditation. So now, again, as usual, invite people just to relax, scratch their itches, move their butts, get themselves nice and comfortable again. If there's anybody outside wants to move, come in. There's some lots of spaces at the front. You can always move a little bit closer. The monks do shower regularly. You don't need to have this huge distance away from the monks. We brush our teeth. We have good hygiene. You won't catch anything. Okay, most people are in now. It's for this evening's talk. Somebody emailed a request for a topic of the Friday night talk. And there are many people who listen to these talks in other countries. And this one came from the United States. And they were asking that, how does a Buddhist or another person exercise a Buddhist response to events like that tragedy in the United States where a young man shot and stabbed many of his classmates? Now, when I give a talk on such a subject, I try to use some of these events which we see on the news and the newspapers, on the TV or whatever, which people talk about, and try to use these as a way of bringing up like the Buddhist ideas and responses to such events which are very important in our lives. And by bringing up the Buddhist response, to real events which affect our modern lives, hopefully thereby you can understand much more of the teachings of the Buddha. Instead of just saying what those teachings are, I'm trying to bring them to life by seeing that how they relate to real experiences in real lives and real tragedies. For example, that Cecilia, our president this year, she just let you know that I'd just come back from visiting Korea. And when I first went to Korea, it was to teach some meditation retreat and to give some talks and to help out in that country. And it's fascinating that what the heck do they want an Australian monk in Korea when it's a Buddhist country? Well, it's about 28-29% Buddhist people there, a whole history of Buddhism. And they kept on telling me the culture of South Korea is just so imbued with Buddhism. The names of the mountains and the bridges and the streams are all named after Buddhist stuff. So you really can't get away from Buddhism. And even if you're a Christian or an atheist in that country, still, Buddhism is right there in the culture. So I was asking, what do you want a Buddhist from Australia in a country which is such a strong Buddhist land culturally? And they were saying that sometimes that you do need someone from outside to be able to reflect another way of looking at the Dhamma, a modern way of looking at it, because it's a very conservative country, in order to understand these teachings, which sometimes are so close to people who have been brought up in Buddhist countries. They're so close you don't understand it. It's just like trying to see your own nose without a mirror. So sometimes a Western monk going to such countries gives them a very wonderful reflection. And one of the first things I was asked when I went to Korea on the TV was, how should we respond to that ferry disaster? Now, probably most people here in Australia have forgotten about that ferry which sunk in South Korea with lots of children on board. But that is still an incredibly raw wound in Korea. So much so, it's the first thing which people asked me, just how do you, as a Buddhist, deal with something like that, with a tragedy? And one of the first things which, I have to sort of mention is that somehow in our society we have sometimes cherished the emotion of grief. I mean, cherished it, even bringing it up to such a huge level that now, for a good example, one of the examples I like to give is when I was on doing my own little retreat in Bodhinyana Monastery some years ago, I came out really happy and peaceful. Now, 15 days living in my cave, nice meditation, really happy. Just the whole world was beautiful when I came out. When I came out, everyone was sad. What happened? Princess Diana died. Yeah, well, you know, we all die sometime. But no, Princess Diana died. But, you know, she's English, she's not Australian. But no, Princess Diana died. And I could not understand to this day why there was such grief. And, you know, for me, that's not a Buddhist attitude at all. Instead of feeling sad when somebody dies, because if you feel sad when somebody dies, you are just increasing and extending the pain and suffering with no result. Basically, you may say, oh, you're cold, Ajahn Brahm. You know, you're just like an emotionless robot. No, you're not an emotionless robot. I laugh, I have fun with you guys, and you love people, you care for them. It's a negative emotions in Buddhism which we try to let go of and be free of. And when we let go of the negative emotions, such as like grief and feeling really, really upset that somebody has died, we replace that with other beautiful emotions. So it's not being cold, it's just not suffering. It's not being sad, it's rejoicing. And how can you rejoice? And, you know, you go to Buddhist funerals. Apparently, that somebody also emailed me, there was an ABC, this is the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, there was a program on TV, what was it called again? Insight, a couple of days ago, on funerals in Australia. And if anyone is listening to this from the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, why were there no Buddhists invited? No, to give their sort of views and responses to funerals. It was just, you know, the usual ABC. You know, Christians, Muslims and Jews, no Buddhists, no Hindus. And these are important religions in Australia. So, and we have something to offer, something different to offer when it comes to sort of grief. Basically, we don't do grief. What do you mean you don't do? Don't you feel sad? Somebody, I don't know if they're still here, if they've gone back now, they just asked me, they're going over to London next week or something, and they said, how's your mum? I said, didn't I tell you my mum died 2 or 3 years ago? Oh, really, I'm so sad. What do you mean you're sad? It's not your mum. It's my mum. And I wasn't sad. I wasn't sad when she died. And the reason was is because she had Alzheimer's for 2 or 3 years. And it was a relief. It was an escape from a prison for her. Why are you sad? I don't know if I've told this story, but I've been telling this story for quite a few people. Look, imagine that this evening you received a letter, or this afternoon you don't receive letters in the evening, you receive a letter in your postbox today that you've won this prize, this amazing prize, you know, for some groceries you bought in the shopping mall or something, a 2-week holiday to Los Angeles, first class tickets on your favorite airline, staying in a 6-star hotel in L.A. With your partner, you can take a friend, all paid for, $1,000 U.S. to spend every day, each, wherever you want. And dinner with your favorite movie stars or rock stars or whoever in L.A. every evening for free. Now, if you won that, would you feel happy? Would you think, wow, a free holiday in L.A., you know, meeting your favorite, you know, movie stars, having private dinner with them, $1,000 every day to spend. Wow, you think, I can't wait to go. 8 days to go, 4 days to go, 2 days. You'd be counting the days, getting so excited the closer it came. And I said, that's like That's like you go see the doctor and you say, you've only got 8 days to live. Because most of you are good people, you're going to go to heaven realm or something nice. So, which is better? Going to LA and meeting stupid rock stars and pop stars and having $1,000 to decide what you're going to buy? Well, that gives you so much headaches. I hate shopping. Is that better, or just go to a heaven realm and just having a wonderful time? So that's why, if you really understand, you know, life after death, reincarnation, and just what happens after you die, if a doctor comes and says, you've only got a week to live, if you really understand, say, can't you sort of make it quicker, please? 3 days, please? Because why do people get sad and afraid of death? Why? And I'll tell you why. It's a culturally imposed emotion. It's not natural. You have been taught, brainwashed, acculturalized to feel sad when somebody passes away. Death is something which is decided, you know, by so many societies to be the worst thing in the world. So much so, what's the most terrible thing, the most important thing, is a matter of life and death. That's the word we use in English. Nothing is more important than a matter of life and death. And I cannot go past, I said I had to tell a few jokes because that's my nature, even though it's supposed to be a serious talk. You cannot go past anyone who comes from UK, who follows soccer, who remembers the most famous football manager, you know, next to, was it that Manchester guy? Bill Shankly of Liverpool, because he once was quoted as saying soccer in UK. Some people say that soccer is a matter of life and death, and they're wrong. It's much more important than that. And that gives an idea of the addiction which some people have to sport. But a matter of life and death, what would a Buddhist say? That's not important, matter of life and death. You're going to get reincarnated again. It's not a matter of life and death. It's how you live and how you die. Not when or if, but the how. That's important to a Buddhist. So when a person does die, it's how did they live? That's more important than the length of time they were on this planet. So these were kids who died in a ferry disaster. And straight away people think, I don't know, 14, 15 years of age, that's not long enough. It's not fair. What do you mean it's not fair? It would be not fair if you only had one shot, one chance, and you know, 14 years and that's all you got. But the world, the universe doesn't work like that. Reincarnation is a fact. I don't care how many people argue with me. The evidence is there. If you don't believe in it, you should go and look at the evidence, which is out there. It's in our library. It is a fact, whether you believe it or not. So I keep saying, if you don't believe in reincarnation in this life, you certainly will in your next. So, when you look at it that way, and this was a Buddhist country in Korea, why on earth are you so sad? Okay, these people will, you know, they died young, 14, 15, they'll get reincarnated again. They'll have another chance. It's not the end of the world. Death. It's just the beginning of another world. That's all. So straight away, when you talk like this, you know, they say, well, fairy disaster just softens a little bit. And number two, what happens when people feel some pain inside of themselves? There is always a tendency to blame someone. And that's the other thing we don't do in Buddhism. We don't do blame. Just like, I don't know how many of you have troubles with the relationship and you split up. Okay, you know, you get divorced, you separate. And now that is a fact of life that many of you have gone through that. If you haven't gone through it yet, you know, the likelihood you will do. So get used to it. But what happens, you know, when you do separate? We just go and blame somebody. And it's his fault. I don't know why I ever went out with such a guy. I must have been crazy to go out with somebody like that. You know, my friends told me the bad news, but I still did it. Or you just blame yourself. Oh, I should have been there for her. I should have done more. I should have not worked so hard. Please, it's nobody's fault. Separations happen. You're not the only one. Why do they happen? If it was somebody's fault, maybe we could fix it. It's no one's fault. Therefore, you have to live with it. How many times when we have any disappointment in life, we go blaming instead of accepting and moving on quickly? We, in Buddhism, the AFL code, acknowledge this is happening. So you've got to be truthful, first of all. The truth is so important, you know, in a religion. It should be anyway. The truth is the number one priority. Being honest, being real, accepting what has happened. Because once you have that reality, the truth, then you can actually do something. Forgiving means we don't blame anybody. And when I was in front of the TV cameras, you know, in Korea, because, you know, they... Now, maybe it's just the new thing to have a white monk, so, you know, it's just newsworthy. But whatever, I milked it for what it was worth and just, you know, taught some Buddhism to a Buddhist country. Just telling them, look, it's no one's fault. The ferry sort of capsized. You're trying to blame, you know, the captain of the ferry, trying to blame the government, trying to blame the company. And one of the monks was a close friend of the principal of the school where those children came from. He was a principal, so, you know, he signed off on this tour. And he feels so guilty right now. He was asking his friend, his monk, can you find me a monastery in the Himalayas somewhere? I just want to disappear. And he feels such pain, such guilt. It's either suicide or just leaving the world and just vanishing from sight, from everybody, from his family as well. That's how much pain he feels. I said, what are you feeling such pain for? You know, you were just the principal of the school. It's not your fault. You know, can you really blame the principal of the school who signed off for these kids to go off on this trip? It was not his intention to do anything wrong, but still, people involved in these tragedies, they do feel that type of guilt. And I think I read in the newspapers on the aircraft, I think not today, but yesterday, that the father of the boy who killed all those students, you know, in the United States feels so guilty that, you know, that they didn't prevent their son from creating such pain and murder. He feels guilty. We have also a culture of blaming ourselves and blaming others, and that does not get one anywhere. It just spreads more pain. It never relieves any pain. So instead of blaming people and creating more pain, and the blame is what stops the truth coming up. And this is one of the things I wrote in my book. It's important. It's a very, very important little piece of advice for people. I don't know why more people don't see this. And I started off in my book with a little story of somebody in a court being prosecuted for murder. So the defendant, you know, was facing the prosecutor being charged with murder. And the judge had to interrupt the examination and warn the defendant that some of his testimony was just very hard to believe. And he told the defendant, sir, do you not realize the penalty for perjury in a court of law is very severe? Now, lying, you know, under oath is a very severe crime. And the defendant replied, yes, I realize that perjury is a very, very bad thing and attracts a big penalty. But the penalty for perjury is far less than the penalty for murder. That's why I'm lying. He never said that last sentence, but that's why he was lying. And of course, wouldn't you lie? You know, to get off, you know, sort of the, you know, being murdered or being sort of executed? Of course you would. Because if the penalty for telling the truth is less, sorry, if the penalty for telling the truth is more than the penalty for lying, that is why we lie. Blame drives the truth underground. Getting angry just keeps what really happened further, you know, from people's knowledge when we have the blame game. So in Buddhism, we want to sort of learn, grow. So acknowledge, forgive, and learn. That's the last part of the AFL code, to learn. So here we go. Kid in the United States gets upset, really upset, takes a gun readily available. I was just talking with one of the other members earlier, and he said, the whole debate in the United States is, do people kill or guns kill? People don't kill. Guns don't kill. People with guns kill. You need the two of them together, okay? So it's not the gun's fault. It's not the person's fault. When they come together, and something else happens. And of course, that other thing which happens, you know, you can actually see, you know, is some people make mistakes. The ferry disaster, now that's like human error. And sometimes you can say, well, I can forgive that. You know, no one is absolutely perfect. Now, some people make mistakes. How many times you've been driving and you've made mistakes? You know, sometimes those mistakes could kill somebody. Fortunately, it probably hasn't happened to you. But it happens to some people. Sometimes that ferry captain or whatever, the person driving the ferry, made a big mistake. Maybe just not really him. Maybe the too much luggage in the compartments, too bad weather. It's usually so many things happen. You can't blame one person. It's just an accumulation of events. And this is one of the reasons why, that instead of just blaming, when we learn, we see that whenever there's any tragedy, you can't really blame anyone. It's just unfortunate circumstances add up and add up and add up. And you have these things actually happen. So the point is, we don't blame anybody. We want to learn why these things happen and to make sure they never happen again. And the guy in the United States was a kid. People who do gun crimes usually, you call it a mental illness, but I don't like the word mental illness because everybody, in Buddhism, everybody is mentally ill until you're fully enlightened. It's just degrees of mental illness, okay? Some people are really badly mentally ill, need to go to hospital, and some people are just average mentally ill, which is you guys. Come and be honest. You know, you have your defilements, you have your anger and stupidity, you make mistakes, you say things you shouldn't. You know, if you're really mentally sane, you know, no sane person would ever get angry or say anything nasty at anybody else. What do you do that for? You really are insane, you know, to criticize somebody else. You don't know what you're talking about anyway. So everybody has a degree of mental insanity. So I don't call it mental insanity. That doesn't just put the problem in a box and just, you know, basically just doesn't really address it. Now the purpose is, you know, what's happened is expectations of life are far too high. The expectations, you can go on an aircraft and you'll leave on time and you get to the destination. Some aircrafts don't get to the destination, like MH370. It just, sooner or later it's going to happen. You go in a car, sometimes you're going to die in that car crash. It's part of life. You must expect that to happen. If you don't die in a car crash, you know, you die of some disease. It's going to happen. If you don't die of a car crash, an aircraft crash, a meteor striking the earth or something, you're going to sort of die of old age. And look at some of the people who've got all old age, can hardly walk, can't hear, and just, you know, cause, you know, you even have to wipe your own bum. You know, you can't do that, so you have to get someone else to do that. So is it really nice getting old age? For me, sometimes, you know, if I died early before old age, yes, I've escaped the old people's home. Yes, you'd be so happy. So look, you know, you're gonna get it anyway, sooner or later. You know, the death by some other means, whatever happens. So you know, sometimes that, you know, when we look at these things, just can't we accept these things are gonna happen? It's part of life. So when we can accept some of these things happening, we can lower our expectations, and also lower our expectations, you know, of other people. Most of the problems, you know, are the old relationship problems. That guy in the United States couldn't have a relationship with anybody, couldn't even have a relationship with himself. You know, he was just really basically screwed up, did not know how to like himself and love himself and have a relationship with other people and accept other people. And why can't we have that relationship with other people? Again, a lot of times it's because we expect so much. Young kids, I was telling this last night, sort of in Singapore, there's a group of young kids over there and they're saying, just how can I get a boyfriend? And she's about, you know, 17 or 18. I said, look, lower your expectations. And then you get a boy. It's obvious. And I'm a monk, I know these things. How can you find a girlfriend? Again, please lower the expectations and you can get these girlfriends. But the problem is we have such high expectations. And, you know, if you look at the media, you expect, you know, the only boy, you know, you really want is someone's really tough, really good looking and just really good fun. You know, someone who's always there for you, can always entertain you, but can shut up when you don't need to talk to them. And that's why some have said, if that's the sort of partner you want in life, can always entertain you, always be there for you, whenever you need them, they're there, but they're quiet when you're not there, you need to marry a TV set. But real people aren't like that, are they? Real people, they say things you don't like. They're not always there for you. They've got their own agendas, their own responsibilities and duties. Sometimes they're with their old mum. They can't be with you. And so when we have this, they're not going to be perfect, okay? So don't expect them to be like the TV set, okay? They're not going to always be there for you. Always be ready to fulfill your every whim and demand. Now that's not possible. Lower expectations. And then you can start having relationships with people. And lower your expectation of yourself. And one of the great things being a Buddhist monk is the realization, I don't have to be perfect. It's a great insight to have. What do you mean I don't have to be perfect? I don't have to change myself and be better. I don't have to improve my jokes. You don't. At last, I can just be me. And there's a great sense of liberation, not wanting to be anything different than you are. Peace at last, not wanting. Now, if you can start doing that and you're at peace with yourself, it's called as basic Buddhist compassion training. Now, at the moment, mindfulness training is all the rage. Even someone sent me an article in the British Parliament. And this is in the British House of Commons. For, I don't know, how long was it? 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes? They had the whole chamber in the British Parliament meditating for 5 minutes. Was it 5 minutes, 10 minutes? Whatever, they're meditating anyway. Imagine that happening in Canberra. That'd be amazing. You know, just not shouting at each other, not cursing each other, not calling each other names, but just sitting there quietly. They wouldn't get much done, which means not much trouble and problems. Well, that'd be a great thing to do. But they said that it's going to increase They said the standard of debates will go higher, not so much stress, kinder to one another, because this is what mindfulness does. So they're starting to do this, you know, in schools and in governments. But now let's take it further. Instead of mindfulness training, compassion training, kindfulness training, I call it, to teach people how to be kind to themselves, to be at ease with themselves. Because you can see, and I did actually see on YouTube the video of this guy who shot that before he killed all these young kids. There's such anger in there, such blame. You know, he couldn't get a girlfriend, no one loved him because it's your fault and your fault. And I'm going to punish you now. Because as soon as you've got guilt and blame, the next thing is always punishment. I think he called it retribution. And we have a society which wants to, first of all, blame people. Once I blame you, you're the problem, I'm going to punish you. For some people, that means killing them. For other means, it's just making them suffer. It's, now I hurt, and I think the only solution is making as many people hurt as I possibly can. It's not a Buddhist way, certainly not, and it's not a wise way. Why do people do that? You don't solve the problem of solving your pain by making other people hurt. You don't solve the problem of the pain of the people who suffered in Korea because it was their children, their loved ones, their kids died. You don't solve the problem of your pain by shoving other people in jail for, you know, incompetence or bad practice or bad seamanship. That doesn't solve the pain. The whole idea of revenge, which sometimes people confuse as justice. Justice is not revenge. Justice is finding the truth and solving the problem, making sure it doesn't happen again. But how much in our society, certainly in the West, and it's in Asia too now, that we have a society of blaming someone and taking revenge on them. Put them away as long as possible. What they did to me, I am going to suffer for the rest of my life and I'm going to make you suffer as well. I don't know how many times I've seen that when somebody's kid has got killed by some sort of, you know, bad practice, a driver who was not careful enough, listening to their mobile phones when I was supposed to be driving, or being drunk, or just, you know, on drugs, and somebody dies. And seeing the newspaper and said, they only got 10 years. I've got to suffer for the rest of my life because I've lost my kid. That is no argument, I'm sorry. But that is not the argument we should be following in our society. You don't lessen your suffering by seeing someone else in pain and suffering. You learn the end of suffering, not through revenge, but through compassion. That's how your pain, if you've lost someone so dear to you, that's how your pain vanishes. Not through revenge. That never works. Compassion does. So compassion training just gives you another option. The option of forgiveness. I'm in pain. I've lost someone so dear to me. And seems to be senseless. Why did that happen? Young kids on a boat, they should have enough technological advances now to have safety. It wasn't sort of on a big storm or something, a natural disaster. Why did this happen? So if we want to end that suffering, we have compassion. The idea that everyone becomes a victim. It's not just me who's suffering because I lost my kid. That ferry captain would be in such incredible pain inside himself. He'd feel so guilty. And the headmaster, the principal of the school where those kids came from, feels so guilty. The pain is already there. You don't need to increase it. Revenge just again increases the suffering in our world. Instead, we have compassion. Compassion is an incredible quality in a human being which is not developed enough. That's why I say it should be cultivated and developed. It's not there to the right amount of quality. And when you have that type of compassion, which really starts to get strong and strong and strong, it's impossible to hurt anybody and harm them. When you have that compassion, if that guy in sort of, was it Santa Barbara, I think, if he developed enough kindness and compassion, then number one, he'd have heaps of girlfriends just lining up for him. And I just, every now and again, you get sort of landed in teaching people you've never been trained to teach before. You know, I like teaching meditation. I know what I'm talking about when I teach meditation, but sometimes you go to computer conferences and I have to give a keynote address at the World Computer Conference some years ago. And I tell you, you know, I don't know much about computers. You know, people here, I've got to get you to help me just, you know, log in and do all this sorts of stuff. It's not my generation. But still, I can still give a talk on keynote. And I gave this talk in the 6PR. There was a show, I knew one of the producers there, and he said, why don't you come and give a talk back on one of my shows I produce? And I said, yeah, sure, I'll do that, I'll do anything. And it was a Friday night. That's the only time I had. I said, yeah, after the talk, you finish about 9:30, and I'll go to the studios at 10 o'clock. And you know what the show was? It was, I forget what it was called, but it was on sexual dysfunctions and other adult problems. And that was a talk show I was on. I didn't know what I was getting into until I got there late, went in the studio, put their headphones on in front of the thing live, and then, what's the show about? And then I found out too late to escape. But still, you can do that. You can talk about anything when you've got kindness and compassion. No. That's the sort of stuff which, when you're kind to yourself, and you just, oh, it doesn't matter if you make mistakes, you're not into the blame game, you're not into guilt, you're not into being critical, you're not into blame and revenge, which means, you know, you can free you. If I make a mistake and say something stupid, I don't blame myself, I just laugh. And that's how I was taught. When people do something wrong, they make a big mistake, don't blame them, laugh. Because, you know, that's what most of the jokes come from in life. People doing stupid things. And the reason why they're a joke, and the reason why you laugh, is you can recognize, I could have done that. It's just laughing and accepting human nature. And I also keep saying laughter and love, they sound, two words sound so close together. Just, you know, one vowel difference, laugh and love. Sort of, anyway, close enough. There's a few English teachers over here, I get in trouble. But they're close enough, okay, laugh and love. And they, you know, that's linguistic, but actually in practice they are so close together. I always say that, you know, if you really want to have a happy time together and love your friends and love your partner, please laugh a lot. When you laugh a lot, then you love a lot as well. It happens. So I try, and Bodhinyana Monastery tell stupid jokes. So, you know, we love each other, so we can have that beautiful community over there. And this is what we try and do here, you know, to have a few jokes on a Friday night on a serious subject. And you love it, don't you? Every time you're... It's a beautiful sense of compassion and kindness and fellowship there. So instead, you know, of getting angry when somebody makes a mistake, we laugh. See the funny side of it. And then the anger and need for justice, the need for penalties, the need for retribution disappears. Compassion training in our world would mean that we don't need to blame people. We don't need to blame ourselves. How many of you blame yourself for something you did? You don't know when, but you're doing it again, as Bob Dylan used to say. That's one of his songs. You don't know when, but you're doing it again. How many times have you felt that, you know, that I don't know what, but I'm wrong. Something's happened to me. Why did this happen to me? I'm a bad person. I'm not perfect. I want to get better. I just can't have a relationship. And people keep dumping me. I'm not perfect enough. I'm not good at school. I'm not good at work. I'm not good as a monk. I've been a monk for such a long time and I still can't retire. I haven't got enough money. I should have saved up some more money. Oh, this is terrible. I'm a terrible person. Now, okay, that's going a bit too far, but how many of you, if you look to yourself and say, what's wrong with you? You can write me a big list straight away. How many of you, if I said, what's wrong with you, think, I just can't think. And they say, what's right with you? Say, oh yeah, I'm a really nice person. I've really got lots of friends. I'm kind. I help people. I give lots of donations. I'm really kind. Can you say that about yourself? Is that the first thing which comes up into your mind? If it is the first thing which comes up into your mind, you don't need compassion training. Well done. You've arrived. Otherwise, you need a lot of compassion training, because that's this guy over in the United States. He felt a lot of pain inside of himself. He wasn't good enough. He felt rejected. He felt nowhere good enough. And when our kids feel that they're not good enough, they haven't made the grade, that is so painful, they blame others. And from blame, we get anger, guilt, punishment. I'm going to punish you for the pain which I'm feeling inside, the rejection. And so there's a few things which are happening there. Solution is, please, parents, please praise your kids. Build them up. Don't be so demanding on your children. Especially, as I keep saying to you, this should really get a big laugh, but it hardly ever does. Only 50% of your children will be above average intelligence. Yeah, I understand that, but not my children. My children have to be above average intelligence. These are children. Half of your kids have to be below average intelligence, okay? You're not special. And your kids, I'm sorry, but they're not special. They're ordinary, okay? Just like you're ordinary. And you're beautiful being ordinary. You know, just go off of that old... keep on having to say this because it's a powerful teaching. Quickly, the trees in the forest, which are the beautiful trees in the forest? The ones which are dead straight, no scars on the bark, all the leaves green, all the branches just where they're supposed to be, they are plastic. They're not real. The gnarled trees, ones which are going all over the place, you know, which have got all these beautiful scars and knots on the bark, branched this way and that way all over the place, they're the great ones. They're beautiful. If you've got a tree like that, you know, in your garden, you love it. If it's a perfect tree, straight up, not a mark on its bark, is that beautiful? I don't know about you, but there's no character, no reality in it. And I look at every one of you. You are all crooked. And that's why I love you. All my monks, they're crooked. I'm crooked as well. Gnarled, scarred, damaged. You are damaged goods, every one of you. Some more damaged than others. The more damaged you are, the more crooked, the more I love you. That's actually how to look at yourself. That's compassion. Compassion comes before perfection. You don't have to be perfect to be compassionate. You're compassionate first. Then you realize you're perfect. Easy. You're compassionate first. You don't choose the most perfect partner to live with. You're compassionate first. And then your partner is perfect. You can live with anyone. Once you're kind. When you're really compassionate and wise, your really crooked, bent husband is beautiful.
But you should straighten up your bark. You know, you should clean up, take all this stuff off you. Change, be perfect tree. Oh, come on. That is not compassion. And it's not understanding what the perfection is. And I always say, when you can love yourself, then you can love anybody. So, obviously, that poor guy over in the United States never learned how to love himself. He was never good enough. Always something wrong with him. And that got so bad that he hated himself. He wanted to take that hate out on other people. If any of you go home and your partner, the one you live with, shouts at you, screams at you, gets really angry, is it your fault? Of course it's not your fault. They are reacting to the pain they feel inside because something happened during the day at work. Something happened on the way back from work. Something happened to them. When you are in pain, disappointed, frustrated, had a really bad day, don't you take it out on the people you love? Of course you do. Because there's something psychology, I've seen this a lot. The psychology is that, you know, this is my husband, surely he can understand me. I'm in a really, really bad mood. I just need to vent, and hopefully this guy knows me well enough. It's nothing to do with him, it's just, I feel terrible. So if that happens to you, you know it's nothing to do with you. So if somebody gets very angry at you, please understand, it's nothing to do with you. They're just suffering in pain. They need not anger back, they need kindness, softness. Let them vent. Let them pour all this shit over you. And then afterwards, when they're empty, then you can give them a big hug. Understand. But don't blame. That's why when you have compassion training, like instead of mindfulness training, let's have some compassion training in our world, in Parliament. Imagine what happened. I'm just laughing, just thinking about it. In the Australian Parliament, instead of starting off with the Lord's Prayer or with mindfulness training, they all sat down and did half an hour loving kindness meditation. May all the members of the opposition be happy and well. May all the members of government just never be separated from their happiness, feel so much joy and peace. Imagine what would happen if that occurred. You know, I told a story in Korea and about, this is, I told it a few times here, it's in the book, the new one, about this lady, she's in Sydney, starting a business, a fashion business, got the call from UK, a big company in UK wanted to sign a contract with her. And this was a huge step for her business. So she had this small girl called Holly over in Sydney, about 3 or 4 years of age, I think, at the time. She had to leave her kid. You know, her husband was a really good father, so she wasn't too concerned. But, you know, leaving your kid for a few days, that really hurts any mother. But important for the family business. So she went over to first place you could get to go to Heathrow. And that's a really long flight. I know, I just came back from Korea yesterday and to Singapore today. Even that tires me out, all the way to UK. She had to just go to her hotel, check in, shower, change, and go straight to the boardroom to meet the CEO. When she got into the boardroom, CEO wasn't there. The directors were there, and they said to her straight away, "You have wasted your time. The CEO is in a bad mood. He's no way he's going to sign your contract or any contract today. You know, go home to Sydney." Now, if that was you, you'd just gone all that way. You're not going to go home. She said, "No, I'm going to at least sit here and see the guy." "Suit yourself," said the directors. So all she did was sat on a chair in the corner of the office, the boardroom, sorry, and meditated. Actually, I think she sat on the floor and meditated on loving kindness. "May all beings be happy and well. May all beings be free of pain. May their physical sicknesses and disappointments all vanish. May all beings just take my happiness for themselves. whatever it was she did. But anyway, she's pretty good at it, because as soon as the CEO came in, "Who the hell is she? What's she doing in there?" Now, whenever you give a public talk, please don't always say it the same tone. Every now and again, shout! Get some story where you can play being angry, because that really gets people alive and awake. "What's she doing in my boardroom?" And of course, you know, she came out of her meditation, but she was so peaceful and calm and loving, she could not get angry back. She simply stood up and walked towards this monster. Because, you know, when someone's angry, this is a CEO, okay, used to exerting power and knowing how to control people. And he was fuming, like big red eyes. And, "What are you doing in my boardroom?" And she was totally unfazed. She walked straight up to him. And she said the words which came out of her mouth, you know, just came from kindness. She was not at all afraid, important point. She was just kind. So she looked at this monster of a CEO and she said, "You have such beautiful blue eyes, like my baby back in Sydney." That's not what the CEO expected. And he was totally confused, as you would be. He didn't know what to do. And so they just stared at each other, this lady just radiating loving kindness, and the CEO just totally being out of his comfort zone, not knowing what to do next. And after 2 or 3 minutes, all his anger subsided, his face was calm. He smiled at her and said, "Really?" That's absolutely a true story. And her contract was signed in the next 5 minutes. And she told me that she got her contract signed. She was jet-lagged. She was exhausted, you know, after that long flight. So she wanted to go back to her hotel and rest. Maybe, you know, give a call back to Sydney, make sure that everyone was okay and tell her the contract was signed and stuff. But she just wanted to go back and rest. But apparently all the directors surrounded her in a circle. They wouldn't let her go. They said, "How the hell did you do that? You're not leaving this boardroom until you teach us how you did that." So when I was in Korea, in a question time, someone said, "Now, what would you do, Ajahn Brahm, if you met the president of North Korea, you know, the dictator, Kim Jong-un?" And I said, "I'd say to him, you have such beautiful blue eyes." Or brown eyes, I think I said. Imagine saying that to a dictator. You know, of course, they would just melt if you did it from the right place. That's compassion power. And if you could do that, if this little guy, you know, in Santa Barbara learned how to do that to girls, he'd just have so many girlfriends. If you can learn how to do that to your partner, and you can't imitate, you can't say you just got such beautiful blue eyes, you know, when she's albino or something, but you've got to be honest to it. But, you know, when you've sort of really got kindness and compassion and you express that to someone, they love you for it. Because, you know, compassion and kindness is just such an attractive quality in a human being. People just flock. So if you have compassion training, not only do you like yourself, you realize you don't have to be perfect, which is... And it really is such a huge relief. We always thought you had to be perfect, you had to be good at this, you had to be great at that, you had to be good at everything else. And just the whole relief of thinking you don't have to be like that. It means you're free. And ha-ha, you become perfect. When you don't want to become perfect, then you are perfect. When you're trying to be perfect, you never are. That's compassion. And when you know that secret, you'll always be at peace with yourself. You then need to change a thing. And then things start to change. This is the weirdest stuff, but you know, I think you get the message. It's not some Zen koan. I'm not trying to mystify you. This is how it works. You love yourself, and then you change.
You become free, peaceful, relaxed, entertaining. You do. And then other people like you as well. You don't have to worry about getting disciples. You don't have to worry about getting girlfriends and boyfriends and goodness knows however many you want. I don't know why you want. You know, one's enough suffering. Come on. No, one's enough beauty. You just commit to one person. That's enough. But you can have lots of family and other people you love to bits as well. So this is what happens, compassion, kindness. Don't blame. Please, no punishments. Don't, because otherwise you end up retribution. These people hurt me, and I'm going to hurt you back. And that causes so much pain in this world. The job of human beings is to lessen suffering, not to make more. So please learn how to be kind, forgive. And then these events which happened in Santa Barbara happened off the coast of South Korea, MH370. The whole list of tragedies in this world, we can learn from them. They won't disappear, but they will get less. And at least we'll learn how to deal with them in a wise, beautiful way. So that's the message for this evening. Thank you for listening. Okay, those who haven't done this before, let's do it properly this time. Follow me. Sadhu. 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 Sadhu just means good, well done, good on you, cool, awesome, whatever. That's what it means. So very good. So we do question time now, don't we? So okay, this is where I usually get into trouble. Only one question from the Netherlands. See, this actually goes live all over the world. You wouldn't believe. I'm going to Korea, and all these people in Korea say, "Oh yeah, we listen every Friday night, or we listen." So, you know, it's the same, almost the same time zone, only 1 hour difference. Or we know we listen on the Saturdays. We really like your talks, and even the monks, you know, and the nuns listen to these talks. Because sometimes the speaking English is hard for people in foreign lands, but they can all understand it. And they learn. This is a way to teach. A few jokes, a few deep stories, and I love it. Anyway, sometimes people do the wrong things intentionally and cause a disaster to happen. Their intention was not to cause a disaster to happen, but they took the risk in doing the wrong thing. How should we relate to the disaster that has happened? Have you ever done the wrong thing intentionally? Of course you have. You know, you're not sort of squeaky clean. No one's squeaky clean. We've always done bad things. We shouldn't have done it. Yeah, I shouldn't have done it, but I did. So what are you going to do about that? If you're going to face blame for that, then you're going to hide it. You're going to suppress it. You're not going to admit that you deliberately did that. But I was in a bad mood. I shouldn't have done that, but I did. So first of all, be honest. The only way you can be honest is when there's no blame, there's no punishment. So honesty, first of all. And then we say, yeah, it was intentional, I meant to do this. But a lot of times in these major disasters, it's not an intention to really do a lot of people, there's just so many different intentions, other people get involved, and you know, you're on a spot and you make a wrong decision. I don't know, one of the books which I read as a kid was this novel called Lord Jim. Who wrote that book, Lord Jim? But anyway, it was this fellow. He was a merchant seaman. He wasn't the main officer, you know, maybe sixth or seventh in command. So who was it? Kipling. It was Kipling, was it? Lord Jim? Oh yeah. But anyway, the whole novel turned around this one moment in this young seaman's life, where they're in a storm, they were taking some Muslim pilgrims on a Hajj, on a pilgrimage somewhere, and it was in a storm, and the captain thought that the ship was going to sink. They only had a few lifeboats, and so all the officers, you know, the crew, the white men, they all went into the lifeboats and abandoned all their passengers. And he was standing on the deck, the last officer on the deck, and all the other officers in the boat, jump, jump, last chance. And he had this moral dilemma. Should I do my duty and stay to protect all the passengers? Or should I jump? And he jumped, abandoned the people, thinking they'd all die anyway and no one would find out. But as luck would have it, even without a crew, they managed to get their boat into a port. They survived. And so all of those crew could never go back home. They would all go to jail for a long time, never get a job again. So they all went off to some remote part of the world. And in the end, Jim sacrificed his life to basically balance the karma. But that whole point of decisions we make in those very difficult situations, should we not? And each one of you have been in those situations in life, momentous, where they could have been momentous. You make a decision on the spot, and afterwards it's a wrong decision. And you have to pay for that sometimes in our life. One moment is all it takes. One moment of weakness. Sometimes it's like addictions. Addictions, if you've ever been addicted to alcohol or other illegal substances or anything, you know, like internet porn or whatever. You know, these addictions people have, you have to say no so many times each day, 1,000 times. You only have to say once, say yes once, and you're back into the addiction again. That's the trouble. No's 1,000 times. One yes and you're in trouble. And that's sometimes the decisions people make in life. You make the right decisions 1,000 times, but one bad decision and your life can cause a lot of trouble. A whole disaster happens. When I understand human psychology, human minds, I can't blame people. Because I realize, I'm honest enough, if I was in that situation, if I was under that stress, if I had to make a decision, would I have made the right decision? Be honest to yourself. If you, say, were in Europe during the times of the Nazis, and you were hiding a Jewish person and the SS knocked on your door, would you give them up to save yourself? What would you have done? Sometimes those decisions, this person's from the Netherlands, you really admire people who have that strength. Not everyone has that strength. And no one has it. No one has it 100% throughout their life. You will make mistakes, which is one of the reasons why they're intentional mistakes as well, which is why that they're accepted in Buddhism, even if they have the enormous consequences. They're accepted, forgiven, to be learned from. So the answer is, yes, some people do the wrong things intentionally. They do cause a disaster to happen. I'd always forgive as a Buddhist leader. Learn. And that way, they're unlikely to happen as frequently again. It's compassion. Look, frankly, what's the alternative? Does punishing people make the disasters less likely to occur? Fear of punishment does not make you a better driver. It just, you learn where the speed cameras are. It doesn't make you a better driver. The fear of punishment just makes you more sneaky. Increase the tax, rich people just learn how to avoid it with more skill. Isn't that true? It's human nature. But if we realize why we should pay tax, if you get that message around and motivate people to pay tax, could that be done?
Maybe it could. Then tax avoidance would not be a big problem. We'd see the point. We see the point of making donation to Buddhist society to pay the electric bills. That's why you do that. You don't force anybody to make donations, you just love doing it. Wouldn't it be wonderful if that's what you love doing to the country? I made a lot of money this week, I'm going to make a donation to the federal parliament. You can't do that now because there's lots of objections, but wouldn't it be wonderful that you'd actually think like that? The government just, you know, was so well respected, doing a really good job, and you realize it was for you, the benefits that was being done. Wouldn't it be wonderful then? You didn't have to pay taxes, just have a donation box in your office. Now, when you throw these ideas out, you're just learning to look at things in a different way, solve problems in life. Same old, same old, same old. It just bores me. It's the same old problems. Every country in the world, tax avoidance, people wanting to migrate to countries and people don't let them in. And the same old problems all over the world. There must be some solutions. My goodness, there are. And you just heard one of the solutions this evening. Disasters happen. Compassion is the solution. Give it a try. Nothing else has worked. Okay, well, thank you for that question from the Netherlands. I hope you can accept that. Any other questions from here? There's one at the back. Yeah, go on. Hi. Yeah, got the microphone's coming.
Thank you. Is it working? It's working. I've been coming to these talks for many years, and I agree more and more with what you say about what happens with retribution, punishment, etc., yeah, and fear. But I cannot also help thinking that I nearly got electrocuted at the age of 15, and had a great interest in health and safety. And I did notice that a lot of this, that in some organisations, the CEOs seem to partake in health and safety a lot more of importance. When they could end up going to jail rather than just paying the company a hefty fine. So does not some of these things help, at least in the short term, until people can obviously get that awareness?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's short-term gains, but no, I want to look at... Short-term is not good enough for Buddhists because we keep being reincarnated. We're in here for the long term. So I want to just see not the short-term gains, because... A good lawyer can get you off sometimes, some of these things.
True, and they can afford them.
Yeah, they can afford them, and they can just, you know, pass the buck to somebody else or get a fund for compensation, and you don't get any compensation until everyone's dead, like in the asbestos cases. So to care. And you know, some CEOs are human beings. They're not sort of aliens from outer space. They want to do the right thing if they're encouraged to. And it's good business to have a compassionate company, a compassionate CEO. And I read an article in, I think, Time magazine, and it was the US Navy. And they said all the people who get to the very top of the US Navy, the rear admirals or the front admirals or whatever they're called, I must say a front admiral must be more important than a rear admiral. I don't know the jargon. But they say all these people who actually get into big promotions, he said it was because of their personal skills. They weren't all like Bruce Willis, you know, just, what was it, Die Again or whatever. Die Hard, yeah, Die Hard. And it wasn't the sort of, you know, that type of person, you know, who got sort of, you know, the promotions. It was the people with the personal skills, the kindness. And that was an interesting article. I should have cut that out and kept it. Because they're saying, you know, even in the army, you know, in military, that ability to care for people and to get people together so they can work as a team. That was a very, very positive, so positive that people are being promoted if they have that compassionate nature to them. So if that happens in the military, maybe the boardrooms as well.
Thank you. I thought I'd better ask my first question to you publicly, as my time might be running out.
Go on, yeah.
No, that's it.
Very good.
Thank you.
No, thanks a lot. Oh, but actually, time is running. Oh. Time is, and maybe afterwards, because it's 11 minutes, I've gone over. So we please would just go over a bit. So you please come up and ask any other questions afterwards. So let's just pay respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha. It's 11 minutes past 9. I've gone over.
Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami